Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, TV presenter, and a gastronaut. Now, six new diet and health innovation hubs are starting work in the UK to help us all to consume healthier and more nutritious food. They form part of a group called the Diet and Health Open Innovation Club. £15 million worth of funding has been made available by three public bodies and a government department. The project hopes to tackle one of the biggest problems facing our health, happiness and our economy. Various reports suggest that poor nutrition costs our health services around £20 billion per year. But poor nutrition is a problem that's been notoriously difficult to solve. So, is there anything to suggest that this project will succeed where so many have failed to make any significant impact? A key part of the project is encouraging collaboration between researchers and industry. So, we want to find out more about the types of research being undertaken, what it could mean for the food industry, and how the research might translate into improvements in nutrition. And we've got exactly the right guests to shine some light on those questions. I'm delighted to welcome Philip Calder, Professor of Nutritional Immunology at the University of Southampton. Hello there, Philip. Professor Martin Warren, Chief Scientific Officer and Group Leader at the Quadrum Institute. Hello there, Martin.
Hello.
And Dr. Gemma Walton, Associate Professor at the University of Reading. Hello, Gemma.
Hello there.
Fantastic to have all of you with us. First of all, can I start with Philip? Generally speaking, what do the statistics show about diet and nutrition in the UK? Because most people aren't short of calories, but having enough food doesn't necessarily mean having the right nutrition, does it?
Yeah, so it's true that there's an abundance of food at the moment, but many of the foods that are available are rich in fat, in salt, and in sugar, but poor in essential nutrients that are really important to sort of keep the body going. Things like vitamins and minerals, omega-3 fats, chemicals from plants that are very important for our physiology and to keep our gut microbiota happy, for example. So for many people, the diet is not as healthy as we would like it to be with these imbalances. And I think this underpins the increase in the number of people living with overweight and obesity, which in turn gives rise to comorbidities like type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and some cancers. So I think we're not in good shape for many people in the population. This is sort of compounded by the cost of living crisis, so the price of food going up. And of course, the less healthy options are often the cheaper options, so that's not ideal. Alongside that, I think we have many people living in a state of undernutrition. This is particularly true in older people, so that's problematic. And I think in society, generally, there's a relatively poor understanding of the link between food and health. So I think it's, you know, we're not in an ideal place with regard to the nutritiousness of the sort of the typical diet. And one of the things the hub is all about is, or the hubs are all about, is trying to enable people to eat a more healthy diet.
Fantastic. Beautifully explained. Okay. So, Martin, what is, well, tell us about these hubs. What is the Diet and Health Open Innovation Research Club, which has the sort of Lord of the Rings-ish acronym of ORIC? And what public health challenges does it hope to address?
So the Open Innovation and Research Clubs are really a way to bring together key academics, researchers, industry and policymakers to sort of share ideas and new findings to address what is a major health crisis, not only within the UK, but actually more globally. And that health crisis is largely driven, certainly in the UK, by the high level of obesity that we have. So we are one of the unhealthiest countries in Europe. We have one of the shortest health lifespans in Europe. And this is largely down to the kinds of food we eat and what we don't eat. And the idea of these hubs is to bring together ideas as to how we can address that. How can we improve the health and nutrition of the nation through innovation and innovative processes? So how can we take technology? How can we work with food companies to develop healthier foods? How can we help develop policies? How can we try and influence behavior? And this is why we have six different awards being given to six distinct hubs. Some of them, you know, we have overlapping interests and we share a, you know, a common goal. And that common goal is aimed towards trying to produce healthier food to help develop a healthier nation.
Now, money and effort has been put into this subject, this area, this problem for decades. I've seen no progress whatsoever. Martin, why does this structure offer some sort of positive outcome, do you think?
I think the major reason here is openness. The key word is open. It's open innovation and research club. So the idea is that we talk much more openly amongst willing partners and really bring that academic and industry leads together so that they can discuss, you know, what it is they're working on, what it is they're trying to achieve. So just within our own hub and ours is on biofortification, we've had really interesting talks with a range of companies, from small, new SMEs developing really interesting technology that will help address some of the vegetarian, vegan problems, through to really very large established multinationals who are really interested also in improving the quality. And when I talk about the quality, what I'm talking about is the nutritional quality of their food, because our big problem is that our food is not nutritionally dense enough. And because it's not nutritionally dense enough, we're getting far too many calories and we're missing out on vitamins and minerals. And that is a major problem. That's underpinning the major problem that we have associated with poor health.
So, Gemma, we've got £15 million of funding. It's a vast amount of money, and at the same time, it's a drop in the ocean, I would say. How has the money been allocated and how are the decisions taken?
So, applications were put in about a year ago, and six hubs were actually awarded support as an outcome from this. And these covered the key strategic areas. So understanding interplay between food components and human physiology, improving health and nutrition through biofortification, biological, social and psychological determinants of food choice and eating behaviour, development of functional food and beverages, and also understanding how food and beverages deliver improved nutrition across the life course. So these are the areas that funding was applied for in. So six hubs have been awarded the funding, and this is to create all these collaborative networks to really improve the UK's capacity and capability of actually delivering in this area in a world-class way. And also some of this funding is actually used to support the working of these hubs together. So actually we can tackle even bigger questions by working all the hubs together.
So you mentioned collaborative capability. Now, how is that likely to result in any tangible change?
So I think because we all work in such different and unique areas, we've all got different specialities. So by bringing these together, we can really start to make changes and start to see complete pictures of what different foods might do, how they might work better, and how we might be able to optimise them. So I think working together is key for filling in a full picture and also driving things like impact and policy. What's really going to make the changes? What's really going to help us move things forwards in terms of health? And I think together, by building on things and working on bigger collaborations coming out from networks developed during this, we can really push things forward.
OK. Now, the funding is part of a recent commitment to invest in innovation programmes that help businesses collaborate with researchers. So what role will industry partners play in the Innovation Hub?
So, I mean, I think this is one of the exciting things that we're working with industry. I think for me, it's the case that in research, you might think in one way in academia, whereas in industry, you're thinking quite a different way. For example, I'm a microbiologist. I study how bacteria in the gut change in certain conditions, and I might be very excited by a particular pathway that I found. But if I'm talking to industry, they might say, yes, but how can we put this into a food and how will this help? How will the consumers know about this and how can this drive things forward? So I think bringing things together with academia and industry is really powerful because you're thinking in different directions then.
Okay. So, Philip, let's take a look at some of the research being undertaken by the hubs. You're all involved in, starting with you. You've taken a leading role at the University of Southampton's hub. What work will be done there, and what's the long-term vision for that work?
Yeah. So we're looking at how foods and beverages can deliver healthier options, if you like, healthier eating, right across the life course. So we're interested in everything from, you know, pregnancy, even pre-pregnancy, all the way to old age. So we're in it for the entire life course, focusing on how to deliver healthier options for people to consume more of the important nutrients. So, you know, better nutrient intake will translate into what we call better physiology, if you like, making the body work a little bit better. And this will translate into better health. And the outcome of that, of course, is less disease, less strain on the NHS and so on, and better productivity. And I mean, for the individual, you know, a happier and healthier life. So we will be undertaking research, bringing together academics and industry to do what Gemma has said, to take our academic ideas through our discoveries and our understanding of how nutrients or foods work and actually make them translatable into something that people will be able to consume to improve their diet. Our own hub will link with all of the other hubs. So I think, you know, biofortification will be very important for improving the nutrient density, if you like, the nutrient quality of foods. And we might test that, for example, in trials in older people or in adolescents or something like that. We'll link to the hubs, which are about physiology, because they will tell us, you know, what are the things we should be studying in our human trials. Gemma's hub on functional foods will be very relevant to us, because functional foods are, you know, what it says on the label. They're foods that deliver a beneficial function. And I think really importantly, one of the hubs led at University of Bristol is about behavior change and, you know, the psychology of food choices and things like that. Because I'm firmly of the belief that oftentimes our problem is not necessarily the food itself, but it's people's attitude to food. So how can we get people to come with us on this journey to improve the quality of their diets? And some of that relates to, you know, their cultural practices, their upbringing. Affordability is a big part of that. So our hub will be working right across the life course to try to provide healthier options, but we will draw on the capabilities of all of the other hubs to make that work. And in doing this, we will be, you know, the point of the hubs is to bring together the academics with the industry.
Mm. So Philip, what concerns me is that lots of work has been done in this area. Is it part of your remit to look at the fact that everything may actually come down to legislation and policy change? Is that within the scope of what you're allowed to do?
So essentially, this is mainly human-based research. So it's actually finding things out. It's conducting trials, finding out what things work. They may be novel foods or biofortified foods or functional foods. But also the other side of the coin is about, you know, food choice and behavior change. So we might already have some foods that, you know, very healthy, but people don't choose those. So why is that? And can we help people make those healthier choices? Now, from this, of course, we might influence policy and practice for sure, but that isn't, at least for our hub, you know, that's a longer term aim, if you like. You know, we want to do the science that will enable those sorts of changes. You know, we already have dietary recommendations in the UK and people are not adhering to those. So one way I look at this is we want to find a way to help people meet the recommendations that are already in place.
Fantastic. Okay. Now, Martin, you're the lead of the Biofortification Hub at the Quadrum Institute. What is biofortification and why is this important?
Let me start my answer by doing it in reverse order, which is, you know, why? And I'll just give you an insight into one of the studies that's ongoing between ourselves and the Norfolk and Norwich University Hospital, where we've got one of our paediatricians and one of our researchers are looking at some obese children who have some behavioural difficulties and so on. And the idea was really to see if there was a microbiome effect underpinning some of the observations. But actually, when they did the blood analysis of the people on this investigation, what they found was that with these children is that for a number of them, there was undetectable folic acid, very low vitamin B12, undetectable vitamin K, very low vitamin D. You know, whilst these individuals may be suffering with obesity, their underlying problem is malnutrition. Mm. They've got a hidden hunger. And it's very difficult. You can't tell. How can you tell somebody they've taken so many calories, they look as though they should be healthy, but they're not because they're missing some of these vital minerals and vitamins that are essential for many of the life processes that are associated with metabolism and well-being. And a lot of these problems actually manifest in mental health issues. So biofortification actually looks at ways of trying to enhance the nutrient density of food. And a lot of that is how can we increase levels of minerals and vitamins, especially within plants. It doesn't have to be plants, but it's largely described within plants. And so the goal of biofortification is really to develop crops and varieties that have this increased nutrient density, that have these much higher levels of vitamins and nutrients, so that these can then elevate those levels within the individuals. And biofortification is normally achieved through either sort of conventional breeding methods, which take decades, or through the more modern genetic processes such as precision breeding, which are gene editing, which achieve that result in a much faster timescale. So our biofortification hub is all about trying to improve the nutrient density of food, whether that's through feeding nutrients such as minerals and so on into plants, or by through breeding crops so that they have and produce higher levels of various vitamins.
Now, gene editing has just had a boost by a massive change in the law. How important is that to the work that you're hoping to do? Does it unleash the restrictions on your research, or is it just one of the angles you're looking at?
Well, the changes in the law are a huge advantage. They certainly allow us to do things that we weren't able to do before. At least it gives us much greater freedom to try and achieve those goals. You know, precision breeding is all about trying to achieve what traditional breeding programs would take decades to do, and using gene editing or precision breeding techniques, those can be achieved really within a year or two. It really does make a massive difference because you can go in a very targeted way, a very precise way, within a few nucleotides, change specific bases which allow you to switch off various genes or to upregulate genes. And that either allows you to overproduce things or to switch off the production of things. Either way, you can either give rise to the production of extra nutrients or the ability to take up more minerals from the soil. All of those things are really beneficial in terms of producing crops that have this greater nutrient density.
Now, the UK has got a pretty good standing in gene editing, I believe, and we're doing pretty well, even though it's only just been made legal to actually produce these things and sell them to the public. Why are you going to be successful here in particular? Now, you know, businesses are presumably doing lots of work on this themselves. Is it important that academia and industry combine to work on particular things here?
I think it's crucial. You know, I mean, academics, we have our pet projects. We like to do things. We like to understand things really at a molecular level. We really want to understand the minutiae of how things work. Business, of course, is keen on making money, and they want to be able to develop things which are going to attract people's imagination or produce or make them much healthier, much faster. And we've got to understand that. They've got to understand our perspective. And that's why we have these open innovation research clubs, because it allows us to have those kinds of discussions. And I think our ability, our technology that's been developed in the UK and across the world, especially in the area of gene editing, allows us to go in, and we've already done this, especially through people like Kathy Martin, who's a co-lead on the biofortification hub. She's already developed plants that really increase the level, actually, of provitamin D. It's essentially a vitamin for 6 months of the year, because during the winter months, when we don't get the sunlight, it's difficult for us to produce enough vitamin D. So she's produced plants which have the ability to make more of that particular nutrient. We're looking at ways of upregulating other nutrients, whether that's vitamin C, a whole range of the B-type vitamins, and trying to find ways, and especially how we can combine some of those things so that you get a beneficial effect. So, for instance, Yeah, big problem with absorbing iron, especially from plants, is that the iron reacts with the phosphate and phytate, so it becomes non-bioavailable. Yet actually, if plants have more ascorbic acid, that's vitamin C, within them, then that iron becomes more bioavailable. So can we combine those two traits so that you get plants that have both high levels of vitamin C and greater levels of iron? And that's the kind of excitement that we want to get. And this is the kind of imaginative stuff that industries and companies really want to see developed. So we are at a really exciting time in how we can take this whole work forward. A key part of this work is all around the fact that we're also thinking about sustainability and moving from a largely animal-based diet towards more of a plant-based diet. How can we do that? Because there are changes in the nutritional qualities and quantities within those different components of our diet. How can we make up for some of those deficiencies? And really, by understanding what is required from diet and by being able to manipulate what can be produced and taken up in plants, it really provides us with that opportunity to work with companies so that those kinds of crops can be utilized so that we can provide healthier, more nutrient-rich plants and crops, which hopefully will address some of the health issues within the UK.
Fantastic. Now, Gemma, you're looking at functional foods and beverages over at the University of Reading. Fill us in. Tell us what you're going to be researching and what are your hoped for outcomes?
So we've all got billions and billions of bacteria living in and on us. And the most abundant area that we've got microorganisms are in our large intestines. So we've got billions of microorganisms, bacteria particularly, in this area. And they're actually doing things. So with the food that we eat, whatever we don't digest ourselves ends up being food for our gut microorganisms. And actually, then some of them are good, some of them are bad. And we can change the balance of them by what we eat. So our diet can influence our gut microorganisms. And our gut microorganisms can have a great impact on many health conditions. So we can see that they're very well linked with the immune function. They're very well linked with actually colonizing the gut and reducing the carriage of other microorganisms that could be problematic. And they're linked to a range of different conditions in health and disease. So by actually managing our passive diners, we can actually help support our health even better. So this is really, really important because by small manipulations to our diet, we can actually help our gut microorganisms to help our health. So this is what we're building on with Inform, really. We're looking at functional foods and how they can support health and recovery through targeting the gut microorganisms. So we're looking at recovery from exercise as one aspect. We're also looking at recovery from mental stresses. So there's been a lot of work done in recent years on the gut-brain axis and how our gut microorganisms might actually be able to impact on the brain. So we want to grow this area more and see how by changing our gut microbiota, we can help recover from mental stresses. And also recovering from physical illness. So obviously the COVID pandemic, a lot of people had things like long COVID and were suffering for longer periods of time. Is there a way to actually counter this by supporting immune function through supporting our gut microbiota and actually helping us to recover more quickly from conditions like this? So we're very interested in recovery through the gut microbiota. And also working alongside the other hubs to look at consumer preferences, to look at biofortification, to look throughout the lifespan to see what we can do to better support these areas to grow forward.
And which industry partners are you looking to work with?
So we've already attracted a number of different partners, from people within sports beverages to functional foods already, and to big snack food companies as well. So we've already got many on board, and obviously this is something we want to grow, because the more different industries we can work with, the more technology and the more minds we can have on board tackling these key issues.
So Philip, have you been impressed with the vision that's been needed to get this off the ground? I mean, is this a difficult thing to kick off?
Yeah, so I think the answer is yes, but it's built on a previous set of activities that also brought academics and industry together that was deemed to have been successful. So this is a sort of a bigger successor of that previous activity. I think there's some novel aspects of how the funding will be used in these hubs that will maybe make the translation into the food industry quicker than has happened before. And I think that's one of the exciting things, that, you know, our discoveries need to be used for the benefit of the public, as we've all said. And we can only do that by working with the food industry, because they are the people who make foods. So, as I mentioned before, you know, trying to make enable people to consume a more healthy diet through either new foods or modifying existing foods, giving them more options, those sorts of things. So I think we're closer in this scheme to being able to translate that, although, of course, the hubs are just getting going. And, you know, this is a five-year program. So I think I'm excited by the possibility of actually bringing about change. And that's how this program is a bit different from its predecessors.
Mm-hmm. So, Martin, six hubs, 5 years, 15 million. It doesn't sound like a lot of money to me to invest in something so important. I mean, I know that there are lots of other programs going on. It's you know, it's not the only project that's trying to tackle, you know, nutrition issues. But it's a drop in the ocean, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right to highlight that it's not a great deal of money. The key thing with the hubs is that what we're doing is we're giving out comparatively small packages of money to help promote, to start in collaborations between industry and academia and with policymakers. So, you know, we're typically going to give out 20,000 here or 30,000 there or maybe 60,000. What we're trying to do is we're trying to promote and get that interaction, that initial interaction between academia and industry to get it going, because it is absolutely vital that we get industry and academia talking together. It's really important that they try and share their ideas and research and innovation. It's really important that they understand some of these sort of practical applications. Academia has to understand how food is produced, so that they can understand, you know, what processes lead to loss of nutrients or how extra nutrients can be added into it. Understanding the whole process of knowledge transfer, understanding who owns the intellectual property and sharing that and maximizing that for, you know, for the good of the country. All of those things are really critical. And underpinning all of that, we've got to make sure that we work on a really firm understanding of health and safety. So are the process and what we're making and what we're generating, is this really going to be healthy? Is this really going to help develop, you know, policy in the future? And I think it's a combination of those things. So, comparatively small sums of money. What we want to do is to develop some of those ideas and use those ideas and those findings to bring in bigger levels of money from industry or from government or collaboratively, because there are various means in which that can be done.
And interesting that you mentioned policy, because I can't see meaningful change happening without legislation and policy. Let's give it a go. But so I'm wondering, Gemma, you mentioned about your industry partners. What's the appetite like for this in the industry? Are people throwing themselves at you saying, yes, we want to be part of it? Or is it a struggle to get the right industry partners involved?
It's actually been brilliant, approaching the industries. They've been really interested and enthusiastic to be involved. I think they see the benefits of being involved with academia as well, and all the universities and research groups that we're in touch with. And then also in terms of policy, so a number of us work also alongside an all-party parliamentary group of the human microbiome, which could be an interesting way in to actually look at the research we're doing and also talk to campaigns managers to see what research should we be doing to actually influence policy? What can get the attention of MPs and people that are key opinion leaders that can make the changes necessary? So I think industry have been very interested, but I also think, changes are needed in policy, particularly on functional foods, to get them more out there. And hopefully the hubs can also actually chip away at this and try and make things happen there as well.
Yeah. Okay. Now, Philip, nutritional research is notorious for being very difficult to measure in terms of impact and certainly long-term impact. Do you have a stringent set of impact analyses that are tied to the work you're doing? Because it's such a difficult area to unpick, isn't it?
Yeah. So I think there's two elements to your question. Obviously, each hub has its individual objectives and stated outcomes that, you know, the success of the hub will be judged against. But I think you're asking about whether, you know, our aim to change nutritional intake will actually have any impact on the public, on public health. You know, if we're interested, for example, in things like glucose homeostasis, which underpins diabetes, if we're interested in blood lipids, which underpin cardiovascular disease, so things like cholesterol, for example, if we're interested in inflammation or immune function or the gut microbiota, there are ways of measuring all of those things and there are validated markers. So we will be working to, you know, high standards of research within nutrition science that is based on biomarkers and physiological outcomes which are well recognized. So we will judge the nutritional and health success of the things we develop through those sorts of outcomes.
Yeah.
I just want to come back, Stefan, if you don't mind, to one of the statements you made, which I only partly agree with, which is about the need for change in legislation. So I think a way to look at this is we have dietary recommendations in the UK, and we know that many people don't meet the recommendations. So if you can develop a food through biofortification or another form of fortification or by providing novel ingredients, you might be able to have a strategy to enable people to meet the existing recommendations, and you can measure the outcome of that in terms of these sort of biomarkers that I'm talking about. Mm. So a good example, you know, I'm very interested in omega-3 fatty acids, which normally come, you know, from fish. Not enough people eat fish regularly, especially what we call oily fish. On the other hand, fish is not sustainable. So if we had an alternative source, plant source, for example, of those fish fatty acids, we could create foods that include those fatty acids, which those foods don't normally contain, and that would enable people to get closer to the dietary recommendation without having to change their diet, for example. Mm. And we could, in research in our hub, measure the impact of those novel foods. So we would be doing something which I think is really important for public health that wouldn't require a change in legislation. It would be just enabling people to get to where the government wants us to get to anyway.
Yeah, but well put. I guess what I'm concerned about is the sheer scale of the problem. You know, if we look at five a day, for instance, we're currently at 26% of people. Well, this from the stats from 2016, 26% of people get five or more a day. That's down from 30 in 2006. So we're going backwards. Although it is slightly higher than in 2000, where there was a little bit of a bump. I mean, that 30% of people getting the right nutrition in those terms. Is such a vast chasm to jump.
I think you're right. So I think this is where, you know, focusing more on behavior change and the things that underpin people's selection of foods, but also affordability of foods. Now, that might require some sort of, you know, legislative change for sure. And you know, those are important elements of what the hubs are going to be looking at, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing is the hubs are not the only way that innovation in this area is being funded. And in fact, there's going to be more funding available to the hubs themselves. It's actually more than the 15 million because there's going to be more money coming the hub's way.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are other, you know, Innovate UK has a big program which is just closed. There's a food systems transformation program which has been funded way beyond what the hubs have been funded. So I think this is one piece in the jigsaw puzzle of trying to get things in a better place, you know, for true public health improvements.
Yeah. Gemma, do you think that any of this is actually going to succeed without a functioning obesity strategy?
So, I mean, obviously we do need things like obesity strategies in place, but I think a lot of the work we're doing, like looking at consumer choice, looking at reasons, trying to find better ways to market things, working with industry and academics together, I think we can still make steps forward. And a lot of what we're doing in these hubs is actually bringing together several experts in the area and getting opinions from different people to try and really push this forward. So I think it's a real boost that we can all do this and work together to try and tackle these challenges. And yes, the amount of money might not be huge, but I think a lot of what we want to do, as Martin mentioned previously, is apply for other fundings that aren't associated with the hub, but we've actually brought the connections together through the hubs. So it's really getting people to work together in this key area, creating the relationships that are important for forging forward and moving things up ahead.
Okay. Now, I'm aware that I'm sounding like I'm obsessed with questions of policy and legislation, and that I think they need to go hand in hand. But whereas, Martin, what you're talking about with biofortification is almost the sort of the hope that you can take what people eat already and make it better for them. You know, do you think it gets to the stage where you can make a jam donut into something that has, you know, part of one of our five a day? Obviously, I'm being obtuse, but is that part of the idea that, look, hell, we haven't been able to crack this any other way? How about just changing the nature, the microbiological makeup of the food itself? Is that desperate?
I think it is something that's pretty critical. You know, what we have to look at is why are we so unhealthy? You know, it's not going to be something that's going to be solved very quickly. You know, we have to be aware that what we're looking at is probably going to be a 20-year program. And that 20-year program is not just about science and how we can improve the quality of food, but, you know, key that is. It's about education as well. It's about trying to get people to understand why it's important to have a varied diet. Why is it important? I mean, what does five a day mean to us generally? You know, why is five a day even beneficial to us? And a lot of people will struggle to answer that question. To me, one of the key components of the five a day is the fact that you're going to get exposed to plants and foods that have different minerals and have different vitamins. And it's that variation which is so critical for health. And you know, and actually we can put a lot of that into a single food. You know, you can take things like algae or yeast or even some bacteria where they can produce a lot of protein, but you can throw in there as well so that they absorb a lot of extra nutrients and vitamins so that you can produce, you know, what would be a something like a healthy donut. We can even develop flours and things that are used in cooking that have greater cellular structure to them so that they're not broken down, so the amount of carbohydrate is greatly reduced. And actually the excess carbohydrate then feeds the microbiome, produces all kinds of healthy short-chain fatty acids. There's so much that can be done, but it's not going to be done instantaneously. It's going to take time. And yes, I do believe that there has to be changes in policy and in education. I think children have to be taught how to cook. They've got to understand. I mean, you know, food and cooking is just chemistry. I say it's just chemistry. Chemistry is quite complex.
Chemistry and love. Chemistry and love is what it is, Martin. Let's not forget the love.
I think it is really important that we do educate so much more than we do at the moment. So many schools have had their kitchens ripped out, and people do not even know how to cook food. You know, they don't even have cookers. They just rely on taking food and either put it into a microwave oven or just buying it from a takeaway. It is not really good and healthy. And therefore, I think it's so important that we have to do all we can, whether it's through policy or education or through science, to try and produce these foods. And as I said, it will take time.
Well said. Okay. My last question then for all of you is really, you know, this 5 years of this, you're all doing some incredibly exciting projects. What are you hoping, A, to achieve, and how the Open Innovation Hubs will evolve? Philip, what's your view of the future for all of this?
So I hope that each individual hub and the hubs together will have conducted some really new and exciting science and made some new discoveries, and that this has led to developments of, I'm going to call them new foods, whatever new foods might be, that enable the public to have healthier options. And this is part of combating the issue of, as Martin called it, you know, lack of nutrient density in the foods. Mm. So we will be contributing to improve public health, but this is a long game we're in, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, if only it wasn't. Martin, what were your view of the future and what are your hopes for outcomes?
Multiple. I mean, I always think of one of the historical characters I'm always quite interested in is Jack Drummond, who was one of the government advisors for nutrition during World War II. He was the one who sort of, you know, told us to eat carrots and things to help us see in the dark. It was just a way to put the germs off the fact that we had radar.
But these things work. These things work, don't they? It's the trick.
Yeah, well, they do. But interestingly, what Jack Drummond noted was at the start of the 20th century, he said, the country hasn't probably never been so unhealthy in terms of nutrition. I would argue the start of the 21st century, as a country, nutritionally, we have never been so poorly off. And what I really want to do, what I'd like to see from these hubs, is to bring academics together so we have a much greater community and understanding of what's going on, what everybody else is doing. And through that community and talking and exploring all our ideas and innovation, how we can link that with industry, get industry talking with us, and how we can link that through to policy so that we can really encourage our key politicians to understand the problem that we have and how it can be addressed. Because, you know, it's critical. I mean, our children, you know, this day and age, you know, what have they got ahead of them? You know, is it going to be a life of obesity and type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disorder? Surely not. Surely we can come and be much more innovative in terms of getting their health up, getting them to understand the importance of food and eating healthily, and not having to worry about these major health issues which are coming their way.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I share what I can feel is a bit of frustration there, which is, you know, I know it's not the only nutritional metric, but, you know, 26% getting their five a day is bloody awful, isn't it?
Yes, frankly? It's dreadful.
Yeah. So, Gemma, that's me. Bring it back down again. But Gemma, last word goes to you. What are your ambitions and what are you hoping to achieve through this in the long term?
I mean, it's really bridging the gaps, finding out where there's research gaps, identified by industry and academics working together across all the different hubs to find out what we need to push out, what we need to move forward. 5 years also isn't a huge amount of time. So hopefully all these hubs have a life beyond the hub because we've made the relationships, we've made the connections, we've made academics and industry want to work together and tackle these challenges. So hopefully it's more pushing forward the relationships that would support impact, support policy changes in the future, and to actually drive forward creating nutritious food for all that's sustainable.
Fantastic. Beautifully put. Well, all power to your collective elbows. I look forward to seeing how all of this unfolds, and I hope that we can check in with you in the near future as well. So Philip Calder, Martin Warren and Gemma Walton, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Food Matters Live podcast. Now, we'd like you to join us in our new initiative, Sustainable Food Week, where we're celebrating the influential people changing the future of food. There are a number of ways to get involved. We've got a digital digest, an in-person forum, and podcast opportunities. It's happening between the 18th and 24th of September. But if you want to be involved, you need to act now. Find out more on the Food Matters Live website or email us at info@foodmatterslive.com. And thank you so much for listening.